This is Cambridge 105 Radio. The following programme contains information about child sexual abuse which may be triggering to survivors or upsetting to hear.
Live
and local.
Across the city.
And South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And welcome to Community Focus, Cambridge 105 Radio's regular look at the work of charities and community groups across the city and South Cambridgeshire. It's a special edition of Community Focus. Today we're looking at the work of the Cambridge-based Internet Watch Foundation. Child sexual abuse material is a growing problem online. Images and videos that turn innocent children into victims are uploaded and viewed by predators and abusers all over the world. But they're deleted right here in Cambridge. Since 1996, the Internet Watch Foundation has been leading the fight to rid the internet of child sexual abuse material. Their team, based in Histon, analyse thousands of web pages and millions of images every year, finding and removing material depicting child sexual abuse and making the internet a safer place for everyone. Every 5 minutes, IWF analysts find and remove an image or video online of a child suffering sexual abuse, and now they want your help. Cambridge, they say, could play a key role in this fight. I'm joined today by Fred Langford, who's Deputy Chief Executive and Chief Technical Officer at the IWF. We're also joined by Jenny Thornton, the IWF's International Development Manager, as well as by internet content analysts Rosa and David, whose job is to analyse the content reported to them. I should point out that those are not Rosa and David's real names. Let's start with you, Fred. Let's talk first of all about the IWF, going for, you know, since 1996. What led to it being formed? What was the idea at the time, and where are we now?
The IWF started in 1996, and if you cast your mind back, the World Wide Web was very early, early formation of the web at those times. And law enforcement in the UK started realising that actually people were sharing illegal imagery via the web. In fact, it was via something called newsgroups or Usenet, which is quite an old technology these days. And they threatened the CEOs of the internet service providers in the UK with prosecution if they didn't do something about it. And collectively, with the support of the police and the government, the Internet Watch Foundation, or SafeTonet as it was called at the time, was set up as a means by which the public could report content that they'd stumbled across that they thought may be illegal but didn't know because they weren't the experts, and provide a place for them to report so that the Internet Watch Foundation could assess it according to UK law, trace and hopefully get the content removed at source.
So as you say, you know, starting in 1996, the world of dial-up modems and things like that, it must have grown, you know, the internet itself has grown exponentially in that time, and it must be a real challenge for you on that one to be keeping your eye on everything, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I always say we're not actually yet at baseline. So if you think the internet, the web is particularly global, there's over 8 billion people in the world, not everybody is online at the moment. So we're waiting for that moment before we even realise what the baseline is going to be of what we're trying to tackle. Mm. But you're absolutely right. The number of reports we received in the first year was around 1,500. And last year we processed 260,000 reports.
Good Lord.
Which was an increase of 14% on the previous year. But of those reports, 132,700 did show images or videos of children being sexually abused, which is a 26% increase on the previous year. So if you think that with every report, it could contain one or a number of images, could be up to 100 images. The way that we work is that we work on trying to action the actual page that contains the image rather than just concentrating on the individual image. Because if an image is on a page, that page, when it's downloaded, would be considered illegal.
Right. OK. And talking about these numbers, it just frightens me when you say 260,000 reports. You know, presumably not everybody who sees an image or something like that online is reporting it. So the actual scale of the problem sounds huge.
It is, and it's getting bigger, and it's pervasive. It's all pervasive. So any service that's being provided using internet technologies, maybe that messaging or a website or somewhere where people are able to interact, there is going to be some sort of illegal material somewhere on there, because there is a percentage of people that are always going to be uploading this content. So it's just trying to get everybody to join in and realise that you've all got a responsibility here, and we can't tackle this sort of growth on our own. Mm. We do need the support of every little point of industry. They might not think that we're actually hosting the content, but are you providing the means by which somebody could get to that content or be made aware the content was there?
And I guess as well, the demand for viewing it is a problem, isn't it? Because there's only this stuff being put up there because somebody is wanting to look at it and download. And presumably that, for you, will represent a problem as well. You want to catch the people who are trying to view this stuff, not just the people who are trying to put it up.
Yes, absolutely. And we're fully aware that, as you say, to stop the supply, you need to squash down that demand. Mm. And the only way to really do that is, and to have a really big impact, is to try and stop people being able to access, and also try and work with the offenders. So when I say work with the offenders, it doesn't make it sound like we're going to help them, support them in that way. But what we're trying to say is challenge your behaviour.
Yeah.
At the point that they may be likely to offend. So that's really how we're going to stop that element in the longer term. But in the shorter term, there are a number of services that we provide for our industry members to be able to stop access at that point of known content or terminology that will point them to that sort of content.
Okay. Now, interestingly as well, you talk about there about talking to the offenders and people like that. One of the things that has struck me in just the conversations that we've been having is this whole idea of child pornography. which is a phrase that people hear put around, and you kind of think, well, pornography has been around for, you know, since Victorian times. There were cartoons and drawings and stuff. We're not, pornography is, am I right in saying pornography in most circumstances is legal to some extent? What we're talking about here can never be legal, surely.
Absolutely. And pornography is between consenting adults.
Yeah.
And children aren't consenting to this activity. They are groomed, coerced, tricked, or just fooled into it in some way. Whereas with when we talk about pornography, it's legal, consenting adults, it's perfectly acceptable. There's nothing wrong with it in the sense that people consume it in a way that they choose to, knowing what the consequences are, hopefully, potentially with the actors and actresses. So it's child sexual abuse material. It clearly is child sexual abuse in the imagery. It's not pornography.
Right, so we've got all this stuff being looked at in Cambridge, but as we've already said, this is the internet is a global thing. It must be a nightmare for you. And this, Jenny, I guess, is where you come in with the international side of things. How do you work as an organisation globally?
Yeah, well, it's really important for us to work globally because, as Fred said, it is a global problem and we feel that that demands a global solution. So what we do is we develop partnerships with like-minded charities elsewhere in the world, but also stakeholders in various countries. So we could be talking about local police forces in a different country. It could be say the Ministry of Gender or the Ministry of Social Development in a country. And we've actually expanded our reach around the world really significantly over the last few years. So I helped to develop something called the Reporting Portal.
Right.
So this is a solution that we've developed, and it's quite unique to our organisation. It allows countries without a reporting mechanism or a hotline, like the Internet Watch Foundation, to report images that their citizens may see or stumble across online through the portal, and that comes straight through to the Internet Watch Foundation, and our analysts like Rosa and David then receive those reports and assess them just as they do for any reports that are submitted from the UK. So what we're doing is we are extending our skills and our ability to review images to countries that really need some support with this sort of work.
Well, I guess, yes, because you were there right at the start of all this. You kind of seem to have stolen the march on everybody else because you've been around for so many years. Are other countries slow to catch up, or are they keen to just sort of kind of click into your model because there's a framework there and you know what you're doing?
Yeah, so a lot of countries are yet to reach their kind of peak of internet usage. And if you think about the developing world, and particularly countries in the global south, they may not have lots of laptops or desktop PCs, but they've certainly got a lot of mobile phones. And those mobile phones are increasingly smart mobile phones in a lot of countries. I read recently a statistic about Uganda. Now, apparently the average person in Uganda has more mobile phones than the UK. And you think, why would someone need more than one mobile phone? Well, actually, in Uganda, they use mobile money, they use various services so they can communicate for free using, say, a social media package. So actually, the internet through a mobile phone is becoming a huge gateway for many people in these developing contexts. And I think it's really important that we link up our work on child sexual abuse imagery online in the developing world, because actually, there is quite a high incidence of child abuse generally in these areas. And I think child sexual abuse imagery online, while it's a new phenomena in a lot of these countries, it's a relevant one.
Yes, and also often this is sort of like the online version of problems that exist perhaps within cultures and communities in day-to-day life, isn't it? It's just it's manifesting itself now online.
Absolutely, yeah. So, we're seeing some really interesting results, I suppose you could call it, from these reporting portals around the world. I was just talking recently with some of our analysts because we got a report from Burundi, which is a tiny country right in the heart of the African continent, smaller than the size of Wales. But actually, we're getting reports of confirmed illegal child sexual abuse imagery from that portal, and we're able to use our link with Burundi to get those images removed.
Now, let's look at the sort of people who are putting this stuff online. You can understand that there are perhaps one or two people of a certain mentality or small groups who find an interest in a particular thing. Is there organised crime behind this as well, though?
Yes, there is. And it depends on how organised the criminals are and what area we're talking about. So there is an element of commerciality with some of the content that we remove. So by commerciality, we mean that we expect it to be behind crime families by working with law enforcement partners, particularly Europol on the commercial side of the content, whereby people are enticed in a way, I suppose, to say that if you pay a certain amount of money to get past this payment page, you will receive X content. Mm. And we're limited with what we can do there at the moment because we're not the police. So we're not able to do test purchases and these sorts of things. So if the content on the homepage is illegal, or if we've managed to gather a username and password, we would go past that payment barrier. But actually, yes, we expect that those are organized crime behind that. And it's just another element of crime. So if we can disrupt and make it as difficult as possible for them to make any money out of this by working with payment providers and working with the police and the ISPs and the hosting providers to get the content removed, we're hopeful that we will disrupt them enough that they will move away from this area and into other areas that they may find more lucrative, which obviously still need dealing with by the police, but it's out of the realms of the IWF. Yeah.
And is this, talking again about organised crime then, Jenny, and because I'm coming back to you, do they tend to, is it sort of where they can, where there is weaknesses within the local infrastructure that means that they can use, like you say, Burundi? I'm guessing Burundi probably has a list of other problems to worry about, and on the government scale, this is way down their list, I would guess. So are they quite agile like that? Because that's the trouble with the internet, isn't it? You can be fairly light of foot.
I think arguably a lot of countries in the developing world do have vulnerabilities when it comes to cybersecurity, and we say, you know, when these offenders online either capture images of child sexual abuse and then kind of spread them on the internet, not only are they taking advantage of the vulnerability of children, but they're also taking advantage of the vulnerability of web systems. Mm. And when I travel to other countries around the world to advise them on developing their own reporting mechanism, a reporting portal, we do tell them that this is something that can equip them to address this vulnerability with their cybersecurity. And we also say that in addressing the problem of child sexual abuse imagery online, they're instantly making sure that their country is known as a hostile place for this sort of criminal activity too, which is very meaningful and very important for them.
Okay, so we've got these portals all set up around the world. Talk me through what actually happens then. If someone stumbles across this stuff online, and we're going to assume that they stumble across it by accident, then how does the procedure work? What happens?
From a UK perspective, we have a reporting page, www.iwf.org.uk, and there's a nice big clear button on there, report content, and it's on every page. So if anybody stumbles across content they're not sure, please do click on that button. Once they get to our reporting page, we'll ask them to copy and paste the URL, so the web address, as you see it in your browser. Just copy, paste it straight in. There's optional comments. You can optionally leave your details, or you can report anonymously. Most people do report anonymously. Mm. At that point, it comes into our system. So to think about what happens from the reporting portal nature, that's where they sort of link in. So if you imagine that process, the IWF's homepage is the UK hosted page. If a portal is hosting, it's got a similar reporting functionality. And all that happens is the report gets injected into our office system at that point, in the same way as it would if it was a UK report. Then it comes over to our hotline team, our team of analysts, and they will take that report and they will view it as a user would view it initially. But obviously we've got lots of tips and techniques that we use to make sure that we are getting the content we're expecting to see, because sometimes people try and hide, obfuscate the real route to receiving this content. It's at that point that once they've assessed it according to UK law and said, yes, this breaks UK law, and then they will trace the hosting location of the content. So when we trace, we mean in the same way as an internet network engineer would try and find faults on the network, you can use that to try and find out where that website is hosted. So using the IP address, I think everybody knows what an IP address is these days, that rather than 5 years ago when most people didn't know what it was. And that gives us the next logical point of investigation, because then it could be in a different country, usually is hosted outside of the UK. And at that point, we have to work with our international partners via an international hotline network called InHope. InHope.org, if anybody wants to go there. And there are a number of hotlines in the InHope Association. So if the content is hosted in their country, InHope manages a system that exchanges reports between the equivalent of the IWF in those countries. So they can assess according to their law if it's hosted in their country and liaise with law enforcement and issue a notice to get the content removed.
And what steps are taken to ensure that content, what sort of feedback do you get? Do you get, thank you for that, yes, that was done?
Sometimes. On the InHope network, generally, yes, we do, but it depends on what the hotline is trying to cope with at the time, because we talked about the volumes earlier on, and the volumes are huge, and certain countries are really struggling with coping with the volume of content in their country at the moment, because different countries get abused at different times, depending on their infrastructure. So they may want to feedback, but not have the time to feedback because they're getting on with doing their job. Other countries that don't have hotlines, sometimes what it does is it highlights the need. So then we could highlight the fact that actually what is happening here? Have you got hosting in the country? Do you actually need a hotline or do you need a reporting portal? Yeah. And so then we start getting into those discussions between the IWF and InHope and who's best placed to try and actually sort of a pincer movement on that country and try and get all the key stakeholders together to actually make something happen in that country.
Right. OK. Now, it's interesting because you're talking about people who stumble across. You're saying you can report anonymously. But I am guessing that if somebody does stumble across this, they are going to be filled with dread that if they report something to you, that they're going to think, well, they know I've seen this. And so just how protected are people if they do want to report something to you? How protected are they?
If they report to us anonymously, we have no idea.
Right.
Just to be clear, we don't keep any cookies of who's been on there or try and track anybody or try and work out where they're coming from.
So it's in good faith in that way.
Absolutely. Now, yes, I understand that they will be fearful. And we provide guidance on our website about what to do. Report to us. Make sure you delete the content. Don't go back. Don't be inquisitive. Don't keep checking to see if it's still there. All these sorts of things.
Yes.
Because if you do stumble across the content and you report it and there's only one incident, the chance of you being prosecuted are virtually zero, because the police will say you were acting in good faith. It was accidental. But if you continue to go back on your system and keep viewing that content, that's no defence in the courts. And the courts will take that into consideration. But ultimately, it will be for the courts to decide and the CPS whether or not they want to prosecute somebody. Because one image might not necessarily mean that person's not involved in abuse elsewhere. Mm. So we are conscious and we're very careful about how we deal with reporters. Because some people also have they get themselves in a bit of a fixation. So they feel like they're doing the right thing. So somehow they're seeking it out on behalf.
Doing your job for you.
Absolutely. Yes. You have no cover doing that, whereas the IWF do. We have a memorandum of understanding between the Crown Prosecution Service and the National Police Chiefs Council, which say that the IWF are able to do our work. Relatively free from prosecution. Obviously, if we all went off the agreed practices, we would also be open.
Sure.
But obviously, we don't. We're independently audited to make sure that we don't do that sort of thing. But an individual reporting is not going to have that cover.
Right. Okay. Excellent.
What I found as something to be really interesting in different countries is something quite similar to the UK, actually, that it is a huge decision-making process to make that decision to report what they think may be child sexual abuse material. And what we say as an organisation is we really encourage people to do the right thing, to follow their gut instinct and follow through with making a report to us, because we have the ability to remove it and assess it properly. So something we do to try and kind of help reporters in different countries to make that leap of faith and to trust our structure is to use these reporting portals. And something that we're doing to try and help with that trust element is to offer the portals in a variety of different languages as appropriate to that country.
Right.
So currently we have at least 10 different languages offered through our reporting portals. And I just did a little check through of our 32 portals yesterday. And I can see that we've got Arabic, we've got Hindi, Lingala, which is a very specific language to the Democratic Republic of Congo. We've got French, Portuguese, Spanish, Swahili, Urdu. The list goes on. But this is actually a really important element that we invest in and we make sure our facilities are available through so that we can help people develop that trust.
Just to add to what Jenny's saying as well, just to give you an idea about the level of trust the IWF is bestowed upon us by countries that we set portals up in. Just yesterday, in Tanzania, there's an event taking place, and the Tanzanian police weren't quite sure what to do with some spurious reports that they were receiving. So now they're going to use the IWF portal as their police aid, because they want to be able to take action, get the sites removed if they're outside of Tanzania. And they had no means of doing that until the IWF set up a portal in their country. So now when they receive the report, they're going to input it into the IWF reporting portal in the country to allow us to be able to take the action from then on to get the content removed. So it's a really trusted global system that we've got in place.
Sounds like it's been a lot of hard work over the years, but at least you have got that in place now. I just want to clear one thing up as well. We're talking here about taking content down off the internet, and that is great. But you're also, in some cases, you are actually involved, or at arm's length, you've been involved with the rescue of the child that's been abused at the other end.
Absolutely. So what we do is, as part of the work, obviously we work very closely with the police. So you'll hear from some of the guys doing the actual coalface work, but they will pick up on victims they haven't seen before. So this could be a number of points. It may be just the fact that they've got such a knowledge about the sorts of content that they're seeing online that something comes up and they say, hang on a minute, this is a bit different. I've never seen this person before. Let's try and hone in on this. Or it might be a bit of information that came with the report or something that's on the page indicating that this is somebody that's actively being abused at the moment. And so we need to report this to the police. And we work very closely with the National Crime Agency CEOP unit, Child Exploitation Online Protection Unit. So we'd report to them and say, actually, we think that this is a new victim. And then they would then get this into the police network as such. And we do have cases whereby, and I'll leave the guys to talk about those individual cases later, but we do have cases where through that report, we've reported it to somebody in CEOP. They've identified that it's in a different country, reported it to their police contact in that country. They've identified where it is, and they've gone and safeguarded those victims and arrested the perpetrators. And yes, the sole focus of what we do really is about the removal of content at source, but actually this is hugely important for us to know that we're making a difference,
yeah,
collectively in the organisation, to know that somebody who was suffering abuse has been rescued because of our activity is just fantastic.
It's amazing, isn't it? And what about, just as again with these reporters, let's just clear up, if someone is listening who knows of a child who is, so someone at this end, at the production end of this content, or a child themselves who could be hearing this, because I'm guessing a percentage of this is happening right here on our doorstep. I'm going to take a punt. On that basis, are they still able? Are they able to contact and go, it's me? Or would you tend to direct them off to other agencies?
I think if a victim got in touch with us, we would definitely encourage them to talk to the police.
Right.
Because there are so many other factors that have to be taken into consideration. They may not be the only victim. They may think they're only a victim from that offender, but there may be other victims that person is offending against. So we wouldn't want to leave those people open to abuse at the same time. Equally, we'd want the offender to be brought to justice. If they're aware of where the content is on the internet, please do also send a report, yes, to get that removed, because we can still take action there. And also we'd recommend that in the first instance, if they're unsure about calling the police, because obviously it's a huge thing for anybody to tell their parents or the teacher or a trusted friend to get that support around them, or to call Childline. So the NSPCC obviously operate Childline, and they're well aware, work very closely with the IWF. So they'll be able to help with their trained counsellors to talk them through about the right thing to do and make sure they get the support they need as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, look, we've stalled this long enough. It's time to talk to the people who I think these are probably going to be the people I've got the most admiration for in all the people I've ever interviewed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. I have had several people in talking about their job. Let's meet a couple of the IWF's analysts. Let's meet David and Rosa. Hello to you both.
Hi.
Tell us about your day. How does it start? What happens in an average IWF hotline day?
The day starts by we have something called a URL list. Which we give out to our members, where we check what images are live and what images have gone down. We then give that list of images to our members, and that list of images, our members can then block from their systems.
Right.
That's the first thing we do every day. All of us, all 30 in our list, we check that URL list. And also what we do, we receive reports from the public. Primarily from the public, but we receive reports from police. We also receive reports from members. So each day we're allocated a number of reports every day. I mean, we're looking at 100 reports at least every
Good
day.
Lord.
Each. So, you know, that's you know, we can get through 100 plus reports, I'd say, every day. We work through those reports. Half the team, we split into two teams. Half the teams work on reports. The other half of the team, then we are able to search proactively for child sexual abuse material. You know, we've got the knowledge and we've got the tools to go and find abusive images and videos to take them offline.
Right. So you're reactive in the one way with the hotline, but you're also proactive because if we
yes.
found this, there might be that, and we know
where to find the content, and we also know how to get it down, as Fred has explained earlier.
Right. My goodness. Rosa, how did you get into this? What made you decide it would be a good idea?
So I thought this would be a good job for me because I have a background in speaking with victims of child sexual abuse, and I know how life-destroying this crime is for children and adults who carry it with them through their life. So to be able to work in the sector where you can actually make a difference and be able to say to someone, I've taken that down, that's not there anymore. You're not going to carry on being victimised by this image being spread across the world. And that's a really good feeling to have at the end of the day.
Mm. I mean, is that the case, that once an image is down, it tends to stay down, or do they pop up in other places as well?
I wish I could say that was the case, but sadly it isn't. David and I will see the same victim several times in a day, every week. Continuously, and that's the cruel nature of the internet when it's used for nefarious means. It means that images are spread and shared and requested and traded, and so one victim can be continuously victimized. That's why our proactive search is so good at being able to search and find that image again and again and keep taking it down.
Yeah.
I mean, to add to Rosa's, you know, we can see, you know, it's terrible to say, but we can see the same victim growing up being abused online. I mean, and that's a terrible thing.
That's a horrible thought.
It's a horrible thought, but it gives us the impetus to get as much material down as quickly as possible. Because every time that somebody's seen that image, that victim is being re-victimised. So, you know, we're all passionate in the hotline, really are driven to sort of clean up the internet from these terrible images.
But on a day-to-day basis, how do you mentally... I'm sure everyone is asking the same question.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing when you said, all right, we get through 100 cases a day, my first reaction to that is, oh, great, because that must mean you basically just have a quick glimpse, quick peek, yes, 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 and move on. But if you're seeing those same faces coming at times, you're actually... It's human nature to take that on board. How do you cope with that on a daily basis?
I think we have... a fantastic staff welfare in place.
Right.
We work shorter hours. We have monthly counselling sessions, which we have to go to. We're all very resilient emotionally. For example, you know, I live around half an hour away from work, a car journey. So to switch off, I drive home with the radio on and just try and forget about the day. You know, I'm a parent of two children.
Wow.
You know, I'm a busy parent, and I do the taxi run, and my kids play sport, and you know, I keep fit myself, and you know, and it's just a way of we're professionals, you know, we can compartmentalize our lives. Work is work and home is home, you know. And if there ever was a time where thoughts got into your head, because we do truly see some terrible images and videos every single day. You know, as I say, the staff welfare is second to none at the Internet Watch Foundation.
And I'm guessing, as you say, that family life, you must cherish it, knowing that actually you've got a couple of kids and they're safe and they're out doing sporty stuff and stuff like that. It must put your own family life into sharp relief. As
of course it does, yeah. You know, we're all human. You know, we're all human here. And so we have good days, you know, and we have bad days. And it does make you cherish what you've got.
What's the best bit about the job? Is it the fact that you are getting this content down, or possibly saving people from this hideous abuse, children from this hideous abuse?
I think so David and I know the scale of this problem. So being able to know that you are doing something really is helpful. And I think there's a lot of people out there, not only in Cambridge, but across the world, who'll be thinking, this is hideous. I wish I could do something. Well, we can do something and we are doing something. So that really helps get us through the working day, I think. Yeah. And when we do have those cases where a child has been safeguarded as a result of something we've seen, or the police have gone on to investigate, that feels good as well, to know that there is some kind of stop has been brought to the ongoing abuse. So there are things that can make us feel good in this environment. Yeah.
Are you seeing any trends? Because we were already talking about 20 years of the IWF, and you know, things have changed with the quality of video. I'm guessing stuff is now available in 4K HD and all this. Are you seeing trends as well as artificial intelligence that seems to come in?
Yeah, the trends we're seeing at the moment are something called self-generated videos or images, and primarily 11 to 13-year-old females that are in their home, in their bedrooms, on their devices, whether they're being coerced.
I was going to say, so this is where perhaps they're being duped online, is it? They're in some sort of chat room, and what they think is a 14-year-old schoolboy is actually saying, oh, I'd really like to see that. It's actually not. It's a predator in that.
I think there's multiple scenarios behind how that content is generated.
Right.
Whether it's someone pretending to be another child speaking to another child, or it's someone pretending to be a different person, or a celebrity, or a girl. There's lots of different scenarios and manipulation behind the scenes that goes on. But something that David mentioned there that's really key is it's happening in children's bedrooms, normal children's bedrooms. And there'll be people out there thinking, that doesn't happen in my house.
This is exactly the point I was going to make. You kind of get this, when people talk about child sexual abuse, you kind of get this image of a house somewhere where these children are being taken to, and there's all the cameras and all the lights. This isn't. As you say, this could be happening in Cambridge right now, and you're downstairs watching the football, and upstairs this could be going on.
That's a really realistic picture of it, actually. It's not somebody else's problem, somebody else's child. These are domestic settings. You can hear mum shouting downstairs, oh, what are you doing? You know, questioning the child. The child might shout back, don't come in, I'm just getting dressed. But in fact, there's a sexual act being performed. And this might sound almost unbelievable to people, but it is happening. We see it all the time. We see new victims regularly. It's a global problem. It's children in the UK and it's children across the world. And it's the most normal domestic setting you can imagine, but the most hideous crimes taking place.
This is a real red flag to every single parent listening. So there's no real protection at all in some areas for these children, is there?
I agree, and I think that's quite sad that our children can't be safe online as they are, as we imagine them to be safe in the offline world. You might think they can walk somewhere quite safely. There'll be people looking out for them, protecting them. That should exist online, and at the moment it doesn't seem to be, which is why I think our work is just so vital. And raising that red flag and saying, look, this is happening now, it's continuing to happen, is really important.
OK, so here we are in Cambridge. The IWF has been in Cambridge pretty much since it started, I think I'm right in saying. It's a local company. And we're kind of encouraging Cambridge, or the whole point of the Every 5 Minutes campaign is to get Cambridge involved. Is that right?
Well, I mean, first I'd like to say the IWF is a charity, not a company, just to be clear there, because we are sometimes seen as a commercial organisation. That's not the case. We always say that the internet industry pays because the polluter should pay. That's a sort of a bit of a mantra that we have in the outer office. But also, yes, coming out of the EU is going to be an issue for us as well, because we will lose an element of our funding, but also a lot of the influence that the UK has in driving EU policy in this area. We're really at the forefront of what's happening globally. As part of our support, we are calling for people in Cambridge as part of our Every 5 Minutes campaign, is to say, yes, you may not be a tech company, but everybody's got something that they can provide. They can provide assistance in raising awareness, which is a huge thing. They could provide financial assistance. I'm not going to duck out of that. We're always looking for additional resources. You may have technical folk working for your organisation that could help with some of the projects that we've got going. Now, they may not be working on something that sounds too glamorous, big web designs and social media platforms, these sorts of things, but we still need people who are going to help us with the basics, then the actual development environment as well, and sometimes lateral thinking across things. But I mean, really, the primary objective of the campaign is to engage with companies in Cambridge and the surrounding area with a view to them becoming members or charitable partners with the IWF. So, like I said earlier, it's a collective effort. We're not going to be able to do this on our own. And as much as it's an unpalatable sort of conversational topic in many boardrooms, I think that everybody needs to realise that this is a problem and it's only getting worse. And actually, the organisations like the IWF and globally are becoming swamped. And that's not just NGOs running or charities running hotlines, but the police are becoming swamped because they get more and more of these international investigations that they're never set up for. They're always set up to police their own national borders, and all of a sudden they're having to struggle. We run hackathons to try and help us, because we have a small engineering team, very good engineering team, of which I'm accountable for, so I think they're the best, obviously. But also to get that broad range of skills and to have people with a different perspective to come in and say, well, we've done X in our organisation, it might work for that problem you've got there. So please do get in touch with the IWF if you want to support us in any technical developments. We are engaging with a variety of academics in Cambridge. We've got the best brains in the world on our doorstep, and they can really help influence, provide guidance, even access to potential funding that we could work on research projects that could then feed into policy decisions in the future. So we're absolutely key on getting anybody in that sphere, the academic sphere around Cambridge, to engage with us as well. And we're also running fundraising events. So if your company wants to help sponsor a dinner, a gala dinner of any sort, or come along and become involved to help us raise money, again, we're interested. Angel investors, all these sorts of people. Cambridge has them in abundance, but it's just trying to find where they are and trying to engage with them on this topic.
So really, you've got this whole idea of you're playing a game of cat and mouse, aren't you? It really is a game of cat and mouse. These guys are trying to keep one step ahead of you. You're using every trick in the book and coming up with some new inventions as well to try and circumvent them and get round them. So you've got that on the one hand. And on the other hand, when companies are talking about this, and when individuals are looking at what do they do with a charitable donation, yes, of course you support people like the lifeboats, because they go out and they save people at sea. And yes, of course you give money to bring clean water to villages in Africa. This is a direct impact on a vast... The numbers that you've been running by me, this 260,000 cases... This is a huge global problem along exactly the same lines, isn't it? So if you're looking at corporate social responsibility and thinking, we've got to do something, tell you what, this is one.
Absolutely. Completely. And it's something that I feel is going to carry on for generations in the future, because if you're helping us to impact on reducing the impact, on victims, or trying to stop victims becoming victims at all in the first place, ideally that's what we want to get to, then you've got the societal benefits for a lifetime. So it's not just an immediate sort of resource implication. Yes, you're helping immediately, but it's the benefits are going to be realised for a lifetime. And I think that's key for people who are thinking about, how do I sell this into my company? Well, just think of that. Think of how you're going to give potentially a life for somebody who could have been a victim or was a victim and needs to come out the other end supported.
Yeah, and in the same way that drink driving has, there's been a change in social attitude towards drink driving and towards smoking of cigarettes, there will come a point at which this is not acceptable.
Yes.
This is not an acceptable thing.
Yeah.
It may exist, but you don't, it's not acceptable. And that's that education and that getting that message across is obviously key to what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Just to say as well, it depending on the age of the victim, so with the very younger victims, obviously they are a different sort of abuse is taking place. But the sort of self-generated content that David and Rosa were talking about earlier, it feeds locker room banter.
Yeah.
In a way that you know, people talk about sort of terminology that you wouldn't say in front of your mother or your wife or something like this, but somehow it seems to be acceptable to sort of laugh about somebody who's just underage.
Mm.
And it's not acceptable, actually, because you're the adult, you're the one with the responsibility. You should not talk like that, because it just continues to fuel increased behavior like that and social norms. And you're absolutely right, to be able to challenge this, you need to be able to challenge the way people talk about victims, the way people talk about kids, even if you're saying they're just underage. Well, they're still underage.
Yes.
You know, it's not just underage, they're still underage. There's a law in for a reason. And so please do make sure that you challenge that sort of behaviour as and when you see it.
Jenny, you've been dying to get in.
Yeah, I just wanted to say our Cambridge campaign, where we're doing all of these different initiatives, whether it be the hackathon or having some fundraising dinners, we're also opening ourselves up to individual giving too. So if people want to give to us, that is something that we can now accept. So donations are possible. What's exciting about this area of work is that we're saying to Cambridge, look, Cambridge has a history of innovation, pioneers who have made the most amazing technological inventions. We want to harness the incredible diversity of skills and talent that's on our doorstep right here in Cambridge, and invite people to contribute their skills and interest to help us come up with more solutions and to stay one step ahead of these online offenders. And they can do that through the hackathon, through corporate social responsibility. Really, we're an open door to, you know, having more people locally involved in our efforts and supporting the absolutely incredible and crucial work of our analysts that you've heard from Rosa and David today.
Indeed, there we are. Right, so if people want to get involved, what's the best ways to do that?
I mean, if they want to get involved, please go to our website. I'll give the address again, www.iwf.org.uk, and please reach out to us. Send us an email. There are contact details on that website to be able to reach out. You will find us on all social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Look for the IWF. Get involved. Reach out to us. Equally, I mean, we've been talking quite a lot about companies that don't necessarily have a role in our immediate work, but there are plenty of companies in Cambridge that do have a role in our work. So it may be that they're the research department for a larger company, or they're the engineering department or something else, because of the global nature. And so to please push internally as well in your companies to say, actually, we could benefit from taking some of the RWF services. We have data sets that we provide to all of our industry members to be able to clean their systems.
Right.
And so if everybody's cleaning their system, it's much more difficult for people to be able to share this content. But it also pushes people into the nefarious, more nefarious areas of the internet where police can concentrate their resources, because at the moment, because it is spread out across such a wide range of services, it's very, very difficult to be able to, for law enforcement as well as hotlines, to make such an impact. But if we can push them all with the support of people who can use their own networks to stop this, to push everybody into one area, at least it's a focused area that we can all focus resources on.
Okay. And just if people are actually interested in the coalface work that David and Rosa are doing, do analysts have a finite life? I mean, how long can you do this for before you really need to think about a career change?
Well, Neil, I think there was a thought process a few years ago where analysts did have a short shelf life. But, I mean, I've been here just under 3 years. And I don't think, how long have you been here, Rosa?
Just slightly less than you.
Okay, so if companies are wanting, or individuals are wanting to actually get involved and help the IWF directly, you can visit iwf.org.uk/every5 minutes, and that's the number 5. So iwf.org.uk/every5 minutes. And if you like to donate, you can either do it online, and there is a link on the IWF website. Just go to iwf.org.uk/every5 minutes, or you can do it by text. You can text 5, the word 5, 10 or 20, to 70460 to donate 5, 10 or £20 and help a victim of child sexual abuse. And I say you'll find all those details on the campaign page on the website, so just go to iwf.org.uk. Before we go, though, time to look at the immediate diary then. Jenny, some events you've got coming up.
Yes, so on the 21st of March, we have a hackathon. And for that, we're really encouraging local developers, coders, programmers to come together and to help solve tech challenges, which are going to be set by our tech team, our in-house tech team. And that will really help our hotline to work more effectively and efficiently. So if you're thinking, am I the right person? Do I have the right skills? You could be a programmer, a cybersecurity specialist. Maybe you've got experience of machine learning or artificial intelligence. Why don't you check out the details on our website, which I'll give in a moment. But first of all, I want to talk about another event that we have coming up. It's on the 12th of September, and it's a gala dinner at Corpus Christi College. That's a really lovely and exciting event that we have. It's an evening gala dinner and a fundraiser, and we're going to have a celebrity that's yet to be announced. So if you want more information on that, you can check out our website, iwf.org.uk/every5 minutes.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Well, I found it fascinating. I found it eye-opening, and I hope our audience has too. I'm sure everyone listening has. Thank goodness somebody is doing that with this work, is all I can say. So to you, David and Rosa, for being the front end staff, well done and thank you.
And
it's amazing what you do. And to Fred and Jenny for keeping the organisation going and just battling away with governments and police for, I don't know how you do that either, but well done to you. There we are. It's all happening right here in Cambridge. It's an opportunity for you to help as well. iwf.org.uk/every5 minutes. But for now, for me, Neil Whiteside, thanks for listening and goodbye.
What about the children? Look at all the children we can change. What about a vision? Be a visionary for a change. We're the generation who's gonna be the one to fight for it. We're the inspiration. Do you believe enough to die for it? Who's got the heart?
Who's got it?
Whose heart is the biggest? Wear it on your sleeve. But we can make a difference. Oh yeah. Who's got the heart?
Who's got it?
Whose heart is the biggest? Now wear it on your sleeve. But we can make a difference. Oh yeah. Change. Be a visionary for a change.
generation.